Special Honorable Justice Margaret S. McBride is presiding.
Good morning, everyone. You may be seated before we call this first case, or this only case.
Drake v. Ronald McDonald's House.
All right. So what I'd like to do is have the lawyers that are going to argue step up to the podium, identify yourselves for the record. Each side's going to get about 15 minutes. Now, I understand that, well, who's going to argue? Please, step up and identify yourselves for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Zane Smith for the appellee.
Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Lieberman. I represent four of the five charity appellants.
Okay. Mr. Lieberman, good morning.
Stephen Messner, M-E-S-S-N-E-R. I represent James Stauffer as executor. James Stauffer as an individual as part of the trust and a third-party defendant.
All right. So I thought that somebody notified the clerk's office, the other charity, that they wanted to speak today. Is that incorrect?
She's here.
Audrey Mintz on behalf of Ronald McDonald House Charities. I filed that out of an abundance of caution in case Your Honors had any questions for me specifically. But we filed a joint brief with Mr.
Right.
Lieberman, and he'll be arguing on behalf of all of the charities, even though he only represents four.
And what is your name again?
Audrey Mintz.
Mintz. M-E-N-S-E. Correct. Okay. So, all right. So then, let's see. So now we have Mr. Messner and Mr. Lieberman. So we'll give you each about 10 minutes. Okay?
More than enough.
All right. And Mr. Smith, you can have the same amount as both of them, or maybe 15 minutes. All right? So now while I have you standing, I want to let you all know that we're not going to talk about jurisdiction this morning. Okay? We're not going to, so I don't want you to have to worry about addressing that at all. I do want you to know that everything you say is recorded. All right, every single argument that we have is recorded. You're all officers of this court, and I want to remind you of that. It's you are actually under oath. Okay? So keep that in mind. I have a lot of questions. I'm sure my colleagues do as well, but I'm just letting you know everything you say is recorded. Unlike the bystanders report that is the record here, that the judge who heard this case prepared. All right? So just keeping that in mind for all of you. So with that, who's going first? The charity or you, Mr. Messner?
I'll defer to whatever is in.
Well, no. Well,
you're the appellant.
You have support court. You'll go first.
Pardon me?
The charity will go first.
All right. Fine. You may be seated. Mr. Messner, you may be seated.
Thank you.
I guess I'm going to ask everybody about this. So we'll start with you, Mr. Lieberman. You're not questioning the fact that you received an email, are you, about the case being settled and that you'd all show up on Monday?
I did not. Yes, I absolutely received the email.
All right. And you're not disputing that you all showed up on Monday with knowledge that this was a case that was going to be settled?
That is true. I will say, I don't want to speak for Mr. Messner.
No, and I'm not asking him.
Okay.
Just you. All right, you have two complaints. One is that you asked that the judge not look at an email. And two, you also said you didn't want the dismissal to be with prejudice. You wanted it to be without prejudice.
Correct.
And here on appeal, you're arguing that there should have been an evidentiary hearing. Is that really primarily your argument?
Correct.
All right. So how do you explain waiver, forfeiture?
That we objected to the dismissal with prejudice at the time.
Okay. So what exactly were you trying to achieve, and what do you think a dismissal without prejudice would have done to this case?
Well, Your Honor, there's uncertainty, I submit, and I'm going to try to be careful in my remarks to stick with what's in the record in the bystander's report, not my own recollection. But there is uncertainty in the record about exactly what the settlement terms were, or indeed even whether there was formation of a settlement agreement.
Okay, and so when you say there's a question about the settlement terms, all right, so here we go. True or false? Did you stand up in front of the judge and explain that the reason that you wanted it to be without prejudice is because you thought that there were questions about the material terms of the settlement?
Judge, I will tell you, the best of my record, that is not part of the record, but
okay,
the best of my recollection.
We can't do that. We just can't. We can't do these things. We have a record. The bystander's report states that you asked that the dismissal be without prejudice.
Correct.
Okay. Are you going to tell us now that you said to the judge at that hearing that the material terms were not set?
Correct. That is true.
Okay.
Specifically.
And what were these material terms? Because you didn't put that in your brief.
Right, because it wasn't in the bystander's report. So
what are the material terms?
That's my recollection. Honestly, what we said was that what was contemplated in the email was preparation of a settlement agreement to be executed containing all material terms.
Sure.
I will note that the judgment order says, and this was drafted by Mr. Frank's counsel, it references the email and says that the email contains some of the settlement terms. And the specific concern we had was disposition of our counterclaims against Mr. Frake and how that would be handled.
Okay, but what were the material terms that you're talking about? Because they're not in your brief, and I don't think that the bystander's report suggests what you told the judge about why you wanted it to be without prejudice.
Without prejudice, because there was uncertainty. Because there wasn't yet a...
Well, the counterclaims were all dismissed. So what is it that you're saying were these material terms vis-a-vis the charities that aren't in this email?
Well, again, that dismissal was with prejudice, and that was the dismissal of the counterclaims that Your Honor is referencing.
Well, they were dismissed. They were all dismissed.
Correct.
All right. So is that something good for you or something bad?
Well, if everything was resolved, it would have been good. We didn't.
Why would you go forward with a settlement if you did not have the terms in the settlement agreement? Why would you go into court and tell the judge that you can retain jurisdiction to enforce this settlement if, in fact, you did not have a settlement? Why would you do that? I don't understand that.
To be clear, Your Honor, we did not ask the court to retain jurisdiction. The court put that in the order at another party's request.
Why would you go? It's set for trial. Everybody's got their witnesses. I assume you called off your witnesses. Everybody goes home. Why would you agree to this?
What we agreed to...
So let me back up a second. So if you got your way and he dismissed without prejudice, then if you didn't get the exact terms, he had blocked out time in his trial schedule, and you would just come in and vacate that dismissal? Was that your game plan here?
No, Your Honor.
Explain this one to me, because I'm befuddled by this one.
The understanding walking into the courtroom that day was that the principal parties to the settlement, that is the fiduciary, Mr. Stouffer, and Mr. Frake, the petitioner, and we would memorialize an understanding in a settlement agreement in a written, executed settlement document. That was what we thought would happen as a precondition to dismissal with prejudice and to, in fact, what's recited in the email is the payment obligation.
But did you ask to continue it for 2 days to get those settlement terms laid out? Did you ask to do that?
We did ask for more time.
Isn't it true, sir, that an oral contract is just as binding as a written contract?
an oral contract. I don't know about Chestnut, but certainly an oral contract is binding.
And you'll have to enlighten me. I've never heard of a dismissal without prejudice that's usually reserved for repleting. Like if I'm going to dismiss your complaint, I'm going to give you an opportunity to replead. That would be a dismissal without prejudice. But enlighten me why you think when there's an agreed upon settlement, an offer, an acceptance, consideration, that it could be without prejudice.
Well, in fact, this court, in one of the cases cited in Mr. Frake's brief that we talked about in the reply, did exactly that. Looking for the name. If you'll give me a moment, Your Honor. Steiner versus Eckert, 2013, Ill App, 2nd, 121290, involved just that. A dismissal based on a settlement agreement without prejudice, and then it would become...
Was that the case where the court was involved in the settlement?
I don't believe so, no. It was an agreed order. The case where the court was involved was the... Your Honor.
Jansen?
I think that's the estate of rights.
You know, you still haven't answered my question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What are these terms that you're talking about? Is it because of there wasn't an agreement between the almost 70% that was left for the charities and Mr. Stauffer? I mean, they're not in your brief. You need to tell us what these terms are, and so you just haven't, and they're not in your brief.
That was, in fact, one of the issues under discussion on the Wednesday before the trial and on the day of trial.
What was, precisely, what was one of the points of discussion? How the 71% was going to be divided up?
That was one of the issues, yes. Whether that would be covered in this agreement or not was a matter to be determined if it could be folded into this or not. But
either way, the settlement that was proposed in the email was short of 30% for the plaintiff. The rest is...
Still in the trust and estate.
Pardon me?
Still in the trust and estate at that.
So are you really telling us that this case was set for trial, been set. It was a case that was 3 years old. And Judge Malone had all of you coming to court, set aside 2 weeks, 2 weeks for a trial. And you're saying that you did you step up and say, I'm not ready?
No, I certainly didn't.
Did you say that the charities are objecting to this dismissal? That there isn't a settlement, Judge. Did you ever say that?
What we did say, we objected to the tender of the email.
What was that? What was the basis of that?
That was on the grounds because we said there is not a settlement documented and executed, this court will be finder of fact. And
I'm not sure you're going anywhere with that. This judge didn't participate in the settlement. Here's a problem I think you have. And, you know, there's a lawyer that's not here who withdrew. And she's the one that sent this email out. And this is what it says. This email confirms a settlement between the plaintiff and the defendants, which was reached today, and which I have confirmed with counsel for Jim Stauffer individually. And at that time, Ms. Howe was representing Stauffer in his capacity as executor and trustee. But here's the other part, Mr. Lieberman, that's about you. As well as David Lieberman, counsel for 4 of the 5 charity beneficiaries as follows. Okay, so are you going to tell us now that there's something untoward in this email? Did this lawyer tell the judge and says to everybody, including you, if any of the parties believe that any of the above does not comport with the terms that were agreed, please let me know immediately. And then she says, additionally, I propose that all the parties will appear on Monday
so as to put the terms of the agreement on the record. So what are you saying to her statement that was later forwarded to the judge that she confirmed with you, you, Mr. Lieberman? What do you want to say about this?
What I will say is that what Ms. Howe wrote was, it says in the last bullet point that the payment to plaintiff shall be made by the executor trustee upon the execution of a settlement agreement.
But those are just additional acts in furtherance of the settlement. They're not, it's not an element of a contract. Those are acts in furtherance, correct?
I respectfully disagree with that. No, I disagree. I think that the, what that indicates is that this is not a final statement of a settlement agreement.
Okay. That's why the judge would reserve jurisdiction to enforce the terms, correct? To make sure everybody signed off on their releases, et cetera, correct?
I don't agree with that, Judge. I believe the judge retained jurisdiction to enforce the settlement, to enforce the terms as the court deemed the terms of the settlement to be.
They scratched out the word on the order, didn't they, about settlement or agreement? I don't know. Are you going to respond to this? I mean, she says she conferred and confirmed with you that these were the terms. It's 29% of the total gross value that was going to go to Mr. Frakey, or Frakey, I don't know how you pronounce it. And if any of you have a problem, let me know immediately. Instead, nobody does anything. You all go to court. The judge is notified there's a settlement. And, I mean, I don't understand, and I guess I'm going back to what Justice Burke said. How could you all stand there and act like there was a settlement and then have your clients? I mean, I don't understand. This is not the kind of thing that happens. We've all been trial judges. We know what it means when we set a case for trial. And we know what it means when we get a notification. Hey, judge, everything's been settled. So either there's something wrong with the, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, how could you stand there and say nothing, not agree? I mean, how could you stand there and say, not? I mean, this bystander's report apparently was prepared because the lawyers couldn't come up with something that the judge thought was accurate. He says that in the bystander's report. And he's swearing to what he prepared for this court under penalty of perjury. So I don't see how this whole idea that there was no settlement, that everyone would stand there mute and not say, judge, we don't agree. There's no settlement. We don't have the terms. We want an evidentiary hearing. Let's get to that. Did you ever ask for an evidentiary hearing?
No, but we did not ask for an evidentiary hearing.
Okay, let's go back to that one. Let's clear that one out of the way. You did not ask for an evidentiary hearing?
No, sir. No, ma'am.
All right, but you're asking for one now?
Correct.
Okay, all right. What case would you cite that allows you to raise an argument for the first time on appeal that you didn't raise to the trial judge?
May I respond to the prior point and then answer that?
Sure.
Your Honor suggested that we stood there mute, and again, as the dismissal order reflects, we did assert two objections.
Yes.
And in fact, that ties to my response to your next question, which was that objection was to the dismissal with prejudice based on what we contended was an uncertain, incomplete agreement in principle. And that was why we objected to dismissal with prejudice.
You ever had a case, because I haven't, where a judge has blocked out 2 weeks for trial, you tell him it's settled, and the judge is willing to dismiss without prejudice? I've never seen that. Why would a judge do that if they had blocked out 2 weeks on a busy trial schedule? There's no judge that would do that. I don't understand why you had that expectation. So I keep asking the same question. I'm sorry, Mr. Lieberman, but maybe you could clear that up for me.
The expectation was that that day the parties would prepare and execute a written settlement agreement.
So, and again, the material terms that you're saying weren't agreed to, the only one that I'm seeing is the appraisal. And you agreed that the judge would appoint the appraiser if you couldn't agree on one. What are the material terms that you're saying weren't there?
Well, I don't know what material terms Mr. Stouffer, either in his individual or fiduciary capacities, would want to include. But I do know that his counsel wrote that there would be a written settlement agreement. And as the Justice alluded, there was the issue of what would happen with the balance of the trust in this, and estate.
Right, but all the charges, all the issues in the complaint that the plaintiff had alleged, those were dismissed against your clients, against the other clients. But you still haven't told us, what is this material term that you're looking for that was missing?
All of the particular one, all of the matters about the appraisal.
Well, that's in there.
That's addressed, though.
Yeah, why did you show up? Why did you agree to an order selecting an appraiser? Why isn't that ratification? Why aren't you stopped? There was an agreed order entered December 7th. There were multiple days when you could have gone in and said, Judge, we're asking you to vacate this. There really is no settlement.
Why did we not ask the court to vacate it?
Why did you agree to an appraiser? How does that impact anything here? That you actually, everyone agreed, there was an agreed order entered in front of the same judge.
I'm not sure I understand. I don't know that it has any impact on anything.
Well, isn't it a ratification act? It's a ratification of contract that you all appeared and you entered an agreed order with respect to the appraiser. Because that was a material term, was how the properties, the real estate was going to be appraised. That was a material term of the contract.
I review it as a separate agreement that was ancillary to this, but I don't know that.
And back to the 71%. Was there ever any litigation between the charities and Mr. Stouffer? That was contrary? I mean, is there a claim or a counterclaim between those parties? Between the defendants here? Because I didn't see that.
There was no adverse
claim.
All
the claims and counterclaims and complaints are between Mr. Frick and all of the defendants, correct?
The charities had separate claims against Mr.
Frick. So that wouldn't be something that would be included because you're not settling a claim or a counterclaim between the charities and Mr. Stouffer.
Well, there was a trust contest and a will contest, so there was a...
And Ms. Howe was the attorney for the trust. She was the attorney at the time for the trustee and executor. And all of the litigation, everything contained in the pleadings that framed this case, was between Mr. Frank and the trust and will, correct?
So she has
the authority to go ahead and enter into those settlement negotiations and achieve a settlement. Because the only litigation that's before us, she has power over for the defendants.
That I disagree with, Your Honor. The charities were all named parties in all the claims. They had their own counterclaims.
I can't remember
all of the pleadings, but the charities
were going to take like 50% under some of these multiple wills, weren't they?
Under the will that was in extant at the time of Mr. Frick, Alan Frick, the father's death, he left 50% to the charities.
Okay. And so, there's more than 50% left under this settlement, isn't there? There's like 70% left, right? And originally, Mr. Stouffer was going to get like $100,000. There were multiple wills, right? There were multiple wills being prepared, right?
Yes, and more trust instruments than wills, but yes.
Okay, so how could you not, based on what you're doing today, how could you stand by and let the court enter an order dismissing the case when you say there's material terms that are missing? How could you let this go? How could you not say, Judge, this is not what we agreed to. When Ms. Howe said this, she was wrong. I didn't talk to her. There weren't discussions. And if you didn't do it the first day, why didn't you do it the next week? Why didn't you do it the week after? And then why didn't you do it when you were all ordered to come up with an appraiser and there was an agreed order entered that said the parties had selected Mr. Richter? I think it was. I don't know.
Again, Your Honor, and I certainly don't, just to be clear, I don't contest that I spoke with Ms. Howe on that day that was referenced in her email.
Okay.
But, again, I think it's not quite right to say that we stood by and let the order be entered because we had a very specific objection.
Okay, but without prejudice, I really don't see what difference it would make. What difference would that make?
It would mean that if Mr. Stouffer and Mr. Frake could not reach agreement on a written, executed settlement agreement on all terms, then...
All what terms? They have to be material, and we've yet to hear this morning one word from you about what was material. Did it have to be in writing? No, that's not going to work. What is the material term that's missing from this email? We need to know.
How and when the payment would be made?
I thought there was a provision, and there was actually, let's see, it says 12-1 cash on hand will not be reduced by attorney's fees. 12-1 cash on hand will not be subject to prepaid expenses or any free billing. Parties tentatively agree on an appraiser. Payment to plaintiff shall be made by the executor trustee in cash upon the execution of a settlement agreement. Execution put claims and from plaintiff so as to release. And then there was an actual statement prepared that actually indicated what the cash on hand was. Wasn't there?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So I still don't, I just don't understand what was material. But what I don't really understand is how Judge Malone would let any of you out the door if there was any question about a settlement. He had 2 weeks to play with. 2 weeks. And he says in his report that you all assured him that there was a settlement. Do you remember that in the bystanders report?
Yes, Your Honor.
The court was persuaded by all parties present on November 29, 2021, that they had reached a settlement agreement. Otherwise, a trial would have commenced. The only objection raised in the order was whether the dismissal would be with or without prejudice. And there was an objection made about the settlement's agreements. There was no objection, rather. No objection made about the settlement's agreements' material terms. That's what Judge Malone has certified under the penalties of perjury. Are we going to ignore that he certified this under the penalties of perjury, that he was convinced that all of you came into court and you indicated there was a settlement? You know, trials scare a lot of people, but not enough to say, Judge, we don't have an agreement. So I don't know what you're expecting us to do here when we have a bystander's report that was certified by the trial judge. And, you know, like I said, there's three judges sitting up here who have all sat in courtrooms, and we know what it's like when a trial date is set, okay? Most of the time, cases settle. The vast majority of cases that settle right before trial. That's a fact. And if there was any question here, I don't know if we can understand how Judge Malone would prepare this and say he wasn't going to let, you know, everybody out the door when he'd set aside 2 weeks for a trial and nobody complained. And then weeks go by. There's an agreement.
And acts take place.
Yeah.
In furtherance to ratify the fact that there was a contract. Like providing the balances of the cash, the CDs, etc.
How is that material to your client?
How
is the cash on hand or whatever? How is that material to your clients when the agreement was that Mr. Frake would get 29% of the value of the real estate and the cash on hand as of a certain date? And then I believe there was somewhere in the record an indication how that was the amounts. So how does that impact or in any way materially affect the charities?
It affects the charities because it reduces the trust corpus, but I don't dispute that that term was reviewed with us and we didn't...
Wasn't everything frozen as of 12-1-2021? Isn't that what this email says? Everything is frozen. 12-1-2021 will not be reduced.
The cash in particular, because they have not yet done the appraisals. But there was also acts in furtherance ratifying the contract to allow the appraiser in the buildings and all of those things. Mr. Stouffer was present.
The 12-1 date was the date on which there was a snapshot of the cash balance and the real estate value.
Right, that's what she means by frozen.
Yes.
Because that's a snapshot as of that date. That was agreed upon.
Yes.
That it would be 12-1-21.
Yes. Again, Your Honor's point, Justice McBride, about there would be payment as of a certain date. I respectfully submit that that's not what the email says. It says payment as of a specific event. And that event is the event that didn't occur. And that's the execution of a written settlement.
Oh, yeah, but those are always done after the settlement is achieved. I mean, it happens every day in the law division at the Daly Center. You achieve a settlement, right? Usually on the courthouse steps, like Justice McBride has described, right before the trial. And then the attorneys go back to their offices and they prepare the documents in furtherance of that settlement that have to be signed and so forth before the person gets the money. That happens every day. But there's a settlement. You can't deny that there's a settlement.
What?
And the court doesn't care. The court dismisses the case right away. And then if somebody doesn't deliver on the settlement, that's why the court reserves jurisdiction to enforce. And then you come back and say, so-and-so hasn't given me the money. I gave him my release. But so, you know, defendant hasn't tendered their check. Judge, I need you to enforce it. Enforce the settlement. But it doesn't negate the settlement. Those are just further acts that have to take place after the settlement is achieved.
That is not what happened in the Steiner case. Again, the settlement was without prejudice until a certain event. And that was what we understood would be the process here. And that is the basis for the objection that we did assert to Judge Malone, and he overruled it.
Well, you're not even actually asking to vacate the settlement, are you?
The settlement, Your Honor, is not made a part of the judgment. The judgment just dismisses with prejudice.
You're asking for an evidentiary hearing, right?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, you didn't ask in your brief that you never entered into a settlement. You just had an objection that it should be without prejudice and that you didn't want the judge to see the email. I'm not sure why, but whatever. So, but you're not even asking that this settlement wasn't in place. You're just saying the judge should have held an evidentiary hearing, right?
I believe
it's really a forfeited issue here because you didn't raise it in front of the judge. You didn't ask for an evidentiary hearing, right? You already said that today.
Right. asked for a dismissal without prejudice.
Right. But you never asked for an evidentiary hearing.
Correct.
Okay, so where are you in this whole thing here today? What is it that you want? You want an evidentiary hearing that you never asked for, that under the cases you're not entitled to because you forfeited this very issue before the court. So what is it you want? You want it to go back and have the dismissal entered without prejudice? Or you want this evidentiary hearing?
The relief we're requesting is, vacate the order, and...
The order with prejudice, right?
Correct. I would submit that on the record on appeal, this court is without sufficient record to make a determination whether there was or was not a valid enforceable binding settlement agreement. And that's an evidentiary matter that requires evidence. And that's what the Jansen case and the other ones we cite hold.
The Jansen case is the one where the judge actually participated, didn't he?
Your Honor, may be correct. I know that is a fact in the other case I referenced.
All right, well, you know what? We're going to give you some time to respond. All right, we'll give you more time after we hear from Mr. Stauffer's attorney, then we go over to Mr. Smith. All right?
Appreciate your time and consideration, Justice.
Mr. Messner?
Yes, sir.
The podium is all yours.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I prepared a response, what I missed in between the lines in the brief, to address the court. If the court wants to ask me questions now, they will probably be the same ones that I address myself.
Well, you're not suggesting, are you, that you didn't get the email? You're more like saying your office was closed over the Thanksgiving weekend or something?
No, what I'm suggesting is Jennifer Howe, who represented the trustee of the L&B Freight Trust, sent an email out late in the afternoon on Wednesday. We were set for the trial on Monday at 4:09 or 4:10. I was not in my office. We left for the early Thanksgiving holiday. I did not return until I appeared in court on Monday morning, prepared with my client, Mr. Stauffer, for his 1102 examination, which was set for that day. That was the only...
Are you saying she didn't call you because her email says she spoke to you?
She did.
And that you approved the settlement?
No. What happened was she had called me either that morning or the prior day and said, I was having discussions with the plaintiff about a percentage. And I said, a percentage of what? She says, I'm not sure we've figured out the basis to apply the percentage. Would 29% be okay? I said, yes, if we know what the basis that 29% is going to apply to. So I never saw this email. I never saw the email where counsel sent to the judge on Sunday saying the case is settled. Never saw that email, and it's not addressed to me. I never saw the email that the judge sent back on Sunday afternoon saying, fine, I'll meet you in court on Monday to discuss. Never saw any of those emails. I never had a discussion with Jennifer Howe on the terms of this agreement.
So now you're going to go off the paper that says 29% of the gross value of the appraised value of the real estate and the cash on hand in both the trust and estate as of 12-1-2021 will be paid to plaintiff in full settlement of all claims against the defendants, the estate, and or the trust, and in exchange for mutual releases as between the plaintiff and defendants.
That is correct, Judge. I never saw that email.
No, I didn't ask you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I never agreed to that.
No,
I never agreed
to that. So how is it that
Judge Malone didn't make you go to trial?
I have no idea. I was there with my client for his 1102 exam. He was ready to go forward with it. I know there was boxes in the courtroom ready for trial. I certainly was prepared.
Okay, well then, when did you first look at this, Mr. Messner?
Monday morning.
Okay, and Monday morning, what does it say?
Well, I didn't hear
it. Does any of the parties believe that any of the above cases does not comport with the terms that were agreed? Please let me know immediately.
The first time I saw that email was when Mr. Smith approached the bench and said, Judge, this case is settled. I have the email. First time I ever heard of the email. Never heard of it before.
Did you say, Judge, we're ready for trial?
Did I say that? No, I did not.
Okay. Did you tell the judge there is no settlement?
Or did you tell him I haven't seen the email, the term that sets forth the terms?
I said to the court, I'm trying to remember, we're going back a year and a half. I said to the court, I never saw the email that was put on your desk, and I'm going to object to the email.
Okay, that's not in the bystander's report.
No, I understand that.
Bystander's report does reflect, though, that Mr. Lieberman objected, but there's nothing in there about you objecting to the email.
But I never assented to any email. I never assented to any settlement.
How did Judge Malone, who had set aside 2 weeks for this trial?
I don't know, Judge. I really don't know. I have my theory, but my theory is not based on that.
So are you telling us today that you were in the courtroom when all the other parties said this case is settled? You said it's not settled?
No, I did not say that.
Okay.
I said
so that. You were there when, yes, presumably Mr. Smith said the case is settled, and you said nothing.
To the court, yes.
And Judge Malone said, fine, I'm going to dismiss this with prejudice, and you said nothing.
That's correct, Judge.
Okay, all right. So I don't know what else you have to say here today.
My clients.
Remember, I said everything's recorded.
Yes, I understand that, Judge.
You're an officer of the court. You're telling us now that you never objected. You never said that there isn't a settlement. You didn't say, I'm ready for a trial. Your client, Mr. Stalker, was there, and you're telling us that somehow we should undo this?
I am saying that we never assented, and I understand where the court's coming from. We never assented to the terms of that agreement that we never saw. Furthermore,
Why didn't you object? Why didn't you come in the next day? Why didn't you come in the next week? Why did you agree to an appraiser? Why didn't you do anything? Move to vacate the settlement because your client, Mr. Stalker, who was sitting in the courtroom, did you remember reading that Szymanski case? An old settlement case. It actually was with the judge. I think the judge had settled more cases than anybody else, but the plaintiff is on the stand, and the judge is saying something about, you know, maybe is there any chance of settling this case? You know, I mean, I feel like saying that right now. 29% is going to the plaintiff. 70% of this pot is left. Okay, so you didn't object. You didn't say anything. And Judge Malone had set aside 2 weeks, and you did nothing. And then you agreed to picking the appraiser. There's an agreed order. What do you expect this court to assume when a lawyer comes in, says we have a settlement, and then everybody else, or all the defendants, are objecting and they don't say a word?
May I address that, Judge, please?
Please, you may.
When we appeared that day on Monday, and I'm going to where you want me to, my client and I and everybody stepped out of the courtroom because the judge wanted to know what our thoughts were. I told Mr. Smith, I told Jennifer Howe, we're not taking this. Nobody assented to it by any of the defendants that I represent. Ms. Salvey never got notice. I never got notice. Mr. Stauffer never got notice as executor.
Ms. Salvey is really kind of a non-issue, isn't she? She was...
She was an executor.
Yeah.
But the executor is live and well.
The plaintiff joined her as a defendant.
You went off the track. You were correct.
My clients never received any kind of document to discuss the terms of the settlement. much less had they ever been discussed with Jennifer Howe. Jennifer Howe never talked to Mr. Stouffer about the terms of this email.
Well, okay, that's the other
problem. She never did.
This says that she talked to you.
By telephone call with respect to the .29 was that a valid number? And I said, it depends how you apply the .29 because I still have the cherries to worry about and how it's going to be divvied up at the end.
In many of these iterations, they were going to get 50% of a remainder, weren't they? After Mr. Frank had a life estate or something. Either way, 29% for the plaintiff. The plaintiff is the person that, you know, sued here. Then you've got the defendants. 70% left. 71 of this pot. And you're telling us that you didn't agree to this, but you didn't say a word to the judge. Not that day, not the next day, not the next week. You even went as far as to have an agreed order entered accepting an appraiser.
The only response I can give you is you're correct. However, when after the November 29th date, Ms. Howe sat down with, I believe, David, not me, to discuss what we're going to do. And I said, well, I have three lawyers here. We have to figure this out because my clients never at all even saw the settlement, never discussed the settlement, and I've got to discuss it with you how we're going to go forward. Ms. Howe decided that there was some ambiguity in the formation of this alleged settlement agreement, and she had an issue with Mr. Stouffer because he didn't agree and he was giving her a difficult time saying, I didn't agree to this. That is why they went ahead and let the appraisal be chosen in the alternative. I didn't even know what number to use for the valuation of the property. Now, the property...
Well, the appraiser was going to determine that.
But there was an issue...
That's what y'all agreed to.
But what I didn't... I never agreed to that. But I know it's in the December 7th order. I understand that. But what I didn't see were any escape clauses from that appraisal if one of the parties thought it was... not benefit.
That's why the court retained jurisdiction.
No, so they
were out things.
No, so that they could take the alternative and say, we're not buying this property. We want to be bought out of the property. That release, that clause, would have been part of the agreement, and I drafted it because I didn't know what the appraisal would show.
Well, that's true of a million settlements. It happened every day.
It was never
at the Daily Center.
Yes. But it was never
in all kinds of cases, law division cases, divorce cases, we set forth that it'll be an appraised value and that's what it's going to be. And then the question is, who will be the appraiser? And in this instance, you guys were going to leave it up to the judge if you couldn't agree.
That was
a specific term. You don't get to then go back and say, oh, well, now that it's been appraised, we don't like that appraisal.
No,
that's
judge,
not how
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that. If we had an agreement on a settlement, if we had, which I didn't, I don't think we do, I would have included as part of an essential term that my client has the right, after the appraisal, to be bought out by the plaintiff. Because
why didn't you do any of this? I mean, let's
why didn't you do anything after?
Why didn't you do anything after the date that the judge who set aside 2 weeks for a case that had been pending for 3 years, why didn't you come in the next day with this change of heart? Why didn't you come in a week later?
If I remember correctly, and again, it was a long time ago, that the lawyers had different views on what to do at that point in time. And
if the view was as far off as it is today,
yes,
that you never agreed to anything,
yes,
then there's only one way to handle that. Not let a judge go through the trouble of having to prepare a bystander's report because he had a record of everything that had occurred in front of him. He took notes. He had a bystander's report. He swore to it, and he says that he would never have let this case go if if the parties weren't in an agreement. And that's what judges do all the time. They're not going to let you walk out the door after they've said two weeks aside.
I understand that.
Okay, so.
But I never assented to the agreement.
Well, but you never did anything to show you didn't.
I understand where the court's coming from.
Well,
but how do I explain to my clients?
Well, that's the really important thing, is that your client is sitting out there and you don't even object. That's the important thing.
How do I do
say, Judge, we did not enter into a settlement. We're not agreeing to this today. We're ready for trial. Our witnesses are subpoenaed, and we're ready to go. That's what I do.
My clients never had an opportunity to review any settlement agreement prior to the 29th.
Yeah, we have a record. Records on appeal are limited. Either we have a transcript, or we have a agreed statement of facts, or we have a bystander's report. We are bound by the record.
I understand.
All of you are bound.
I understand.
Okay, wait. Now, you know, there's a rule here that it has nothing to do with whatever you did there, okay? But if you didn't ask for an evidentiary hearing, you're not going to get one now because you forfeited that challenge, okay? I asked Mr. Lieberman, did you ask for an evidentiary hearing?
At the appointed time, no.
Okay, well, it's too late then. You have to ask for something. You have to give that judge a chance to make amends. You have to let the judge know, Judge, we made a mistake. We didn't really agree on the settlement. And you know what? Let's have an evidentiary hearing. Do it a week later. Do it 2 weeks later. Ask to vacate the settlement. But no, nobody did that.
I'm not disputing what the
Why didn't you move to vacate that?
I guess there was a, for lack of a better word, confusion between what to do now between the lawyers. Our clients, my client, said, I never agreed with what Jennifer Howe proposed to the court. I never was notified of what Jennifer Howe proposed to the court. I have no idea what she proposed until Mr. Smith walks in with this email on the 29th. I am here.
How long have you been practicing law?
47, 46 years.
Okay. I got a couple more on you. But you know what? I don't know how you can go into court, and then you've got, at some point, you had to read this. And then the day of the trial, everybody knows what happens the day of the trial. You either are ready, or you've settled. Or you ask for a continuance.
And if Mr. Stoffer, or Stoffer, I don't know how to
Stoffer.
Say it. Stoffer. If Mr. Stoffer had all these objections, why did he then disclose the balances on 12-121 of three different checking accounts, one savings account, a CD, then go to court and agree to a specific real estate appraiser, then give that appraiser access to the property and accompany that appraiser to the site visit? Those are all ratification acts of the contract.
My only response to that, Judge, is my client never had any discussions with Jennifer Howe as the beneficiary, the trustee of the trust, as to those terms. I think he was as dumbfounded as I was. Why we didn't do anything the next day, 2 days later, 3 days later, my only answer is confusion as to which path we were taking. That's all.
Well, she says she conferred with you.
She only got the 29%, and I didn't know what the 29% meant.
And what is it that you're all fighting over? 29% goes to the plaintiff. What is it? What is it?
The bottom line, Judge, we were all prepared to go to, I was all prepared to go to trial.
Oh, okay, so there was never any, no, you were never going to settle. You were going to go,
I think settlement was something that was always discussed at one point in time, but the amounts were always in excess of what we ever agreed to do.
Okay, so you're saying that you envisioned something larger than the 71% that's left over for the charities and your client?
I
was the next door neighbor?
Pardon me?
Mr. Stoffer was Mr. Frake's longtime next door neighbor, right? And then his girlfriend became the alternate executor?
It wasn't his girlfriend.
Oh, well, whatever. That's right, the record suggests that.
We don't, I'm just answering.
Lisa Selby wasn't going to get any money.
No.
It's Mr. Stoffer.
Mr. Stoffer
And at one point, he was just going to get $100,000, wasn't he?
Yes, in the original document. That was changed.
Yeah.
And the reasons for that change, we don't need to go to in front of the court because it's not in the pleadings.
No, it's not.
So I'm not going there.
No, no.
However,
we have a bystander's report. That is the record.
We took us 6 months to get the bystander's report, and I am suggesting to the court, I'm not even suggesting, I'm saying I never sent it. My client never sent it to either Jennifer Howe's email or the alleged settlement agreement.
So did the judge, he said who was present before him.
Yes.
And he said all the parties agreed there was a settlement. That's what he said.
That is untrue.
Okay.
I'm just saying that is untrue. And you may have sworn to it.
He would have, in other words, if you had said you were ready for trial, he would have proceeded, right?
I expect so.
And you didn't say that.
I was following the footsteps of Jennifer Howe and David.
You never said I'm ready for trial.
I never said it.
All right. Okay. But somehow, and you never really let the judge know you didn't agree, did you?
Yes, I did, but not on that date. Not on that date.
Okay.
We had a very acrimonious litigation. I never agreed to anything with plaintiff as to a settlement. Nor did my clients. They had no knowledge. No.
But he was there. Mr. Stauffer was in court.
I told him he had to be in court.
No, but he was.
Yes.
Okay.
I had prepared him for his 1102, which was supposed to start that day.
And he didn't say anything either, did he?
Mr. Stauffer's been told by the bench not to open his mouth during the last 4 years because he's a very vocal individual that says what's on his mind.
Okay, well.
And he just kept quiet. He just.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll give you maybe a couple of minutes, but, you're not saying any material terms are missing, are you?
Well, the material terms, there was I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're kind of stuck with your 7-page brief.
My clients didn't agree
State
to that.
Statement of jurisdiction.
We never agreed to it.
Yeah.
I never got it. How come? When plaintiff's counsel sends an email to the court, then it's settled. I don't receive it, so I'm prepared for Monday morning. How come an email from the court doesn't come to me, so I'm prepared Monday morning?
It wasn't plaintiff's counsel's email.
Pardon me?
It wasn't plaintiff's counsel's email. It was Ms. Howe's email, wasn't it?
Plaintiff's counsel emailed the court on Sunday.
Okay. We're not talking about that. We're talking about, she's asking about the material terms of this settlement.
My client never saw that.
Monday morning, you're here, and the trial is set.
I have my client did.
And you saw it on Monday morning.
And it's 29% of the cash.
I saw a settlement that was not discussed with me or my client.
Then agreed.
But you didn't say that to the court. So, that's forfeiture. It's waived.
I was prepared. My client was there. It was not our case to put on. It was plaintiff's case to
file. No, I know, but that's not.
I'm trying to answer your question.
Yeah, no, you did mention that in your brief, that they were the ones that had 75 witnesses, and the judge had already ruled on motions in limine. I mean, this thing was supposed to go.
You're right. It absolutely was supposed to go, and that's why my client was there.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll give you a little more. Mr. Smith, we'll let him talk briefly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Zane Smith for the appellee. I was looking at the bystanders report, and I counted 7 lawyers that were there Monday morning. Ms. Howe and I had negotiated the settlement before Thanksgiving, and we were made sure, and Ms. Howe's email reflected that everybody was notified and that if there was going to be an objection, it needed to be made either in the form of an email or on that Monday morning before the judge. I think the court has, the panel has focused on the issue or the lack of issues, and what the appellants are requesting is relief for basically sitting on their hands. And I don't think that that should be considered by the court or agreeable to the court.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Well, we'll hear from in rebuttal. Mr. Lieberman, do you want to say anything?
Ms. Mintz, if you want to address a couple questions.
Sure, please.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Were you in court that day?
I was not.
Who was there on behalf of your firm?
My associate.
Ms. Gold?
Ms. Gold was, mm-hmm. Yes. She is no longer with the firm. However, she was there that day. And I understand where Your Honors are coming from. I just want to quickly on rebuttal explain the position that the charities were in and why we find ourselves here today. So as the 30-day date was approaching to make that dismissal order final, our claims were dismissed with prejudice. And we weren't the parties fighting about the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement wasn't, or at least those terms that were in the email, they weren't incorporated in the dismissal order or judgment. There was no written document. And so our concern was we suddenly found ourselves potentially with no claims and no resolution among the other parties. And you brought up the issue earlier about whether or not the appropriate procedure would be to vacate.
Could you just explain, you said you found yourselves without any basis for a claim. What do you mean?
Right.
Apparently the state and the trust was made up of, we'll say, several million dollars. I don't
Correct.
Know the exact amount. But only 29% of whatever there was going to the plaintiff. The rest was really essentially for the defendants. So what do you mean by there was nothing for us?
Certainly. So I specifically mean our counterclaims against Mr. Frake. They had been dismissed with prejudice, but there wasn't actually any executed settlement agreement. It didn't look as if one was forthcoming from the parties. We don't have control over that.
Everything was dismissed. Everything against your... Well, you actually, as Justice Walker pointed out, the counterclaims were vis-a-vis the plaintiff and Stauffer, right?
Our counterclaims were against Mr. Frake.
And what were they in essence?
Your Honor, I am not going to be able to get into the detail of the counterclaims because I was not involved in the vast majority of this litigation. I came in November. I believe they were part of the case that was originally in the Chancery Court that was eventually consolidated with the probate court. But the concern that we had was where was the case going, right? There wasn't any executed document. We had requested that the case not be dismissed with prejudice, specifically because it had been a very contested piece of litigation, as probate cases typically are.
What would the without it change, other than the fact that either way, the judge had maintained jurisdiction over this agreement? So what can you imagine that the word without, how would that change anything when the judge had complete control over this case as far as the settlement?
Certainly. The concern that we had that day in court was exactly how this has played out, that we didn't yet have a signed agreement. And without a signed agreement, things might fall apart. And if things fall apart and there is a dismissal with prejudice, what is going to happen to our claims? And I understand Your Honor's position
That's not really answering the question, because if things fell apart, the judge would just vacate the dismissal.
And put
everybody back to square one. And without prejudice, it doesn't change anything. Because in the order, the order where, you know, all the claims were dismissed, that the court retains jurisdiction of these matters to enforce the settlement terms. Now, if there were settlement terms, you know, earlier, after many promptings, we were yet to hear what the material terms are that were missing. So we're not going to get back into that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you suggest that without prejudice would have any impact at all, it wouldn't have any because the court retained jurisdiction. And if there was a problem and there was any kind of funny business or anything else that wasn't incorporated in this email, the judge would have seen to it that it would be corrected. Or he would just say, sorry, Mr. Smith, the deal's off.
And I'm not going to contest that. I think where we found ourselves, though, 30 days coming, you know, 30 days past that, the entry of that dismissal order, was we weren't sure what was going to happen. And the question was, and you had raised it earlier.
When you say we weren't sure what was going to happen, as far as what?
Whether
what? Not,
correct.
What? Aren't you just talking about money at the end of the day? Isn't that what this case is about? My goodness, who are we fooling? This is about money.
I agree with that.
The charities felt they were entitled to so much. Mr. Stauffer felt he was entitled to so much. The plaintiff, the son of the man who died, Mr. Frake, Alan, they, Mr. Frake, the son, he thought he was entitled to so much. We're talking about money here. So how could all of this, I don't understand. If the judge said without prejudice, so what? The judge was retaining jurisdiction. If there's something that somebody's hiding from us, we should know, okay? But the judge gave us a certified bystander's report. We're talking about money here. If there was some dispute about what the charities and Mr. Stauffer were supposed to get, the judge could have corrected that.
And I understand that, Your Honor. I'm just trying to explain why the charities have done what they have done. And that was specifically because as we sat there 30 days out, we had claims that had been dismissed with prejudice. We had no control over these other two parties. To make it clear, we're not contesting that the 29% is an amount the charities agreed to Mr. Frake.
You're not.
We don't contest that. But
what do you contest?
We contest specifically the dismissal with prejudice because we wanted a written agreement before the case was dismissed with prejudice.
But if you're agreeing that Mr. Frake, the son, is entitled to the 29%, what are we doing here?
The reason we are here, Your Honor.
Your claims, anything against you or the clients, was dismissed.
I understand that. The question that we had 30 days out was, do we need to move to vacate the order? What is going to happen with these dismissed claims?
Why didn't you then? I guess we'll ask that question again.
Yeah, because Mr. Stauffer appealed, and so it came up to the appellate court. So we thought that this was probably the best avenue for pursuing our rights.
Well, you know that the circuit court has jurisdiction for 30 days, okay? And even if he had filed his notice, you could have moved to vacate. The trial judge has 30 days. And if you ask to vacate the judgment, then that appeal of Mr. Stauffer's is premature. And it doesn't become effective until the trial judge rules on a motion to vacate a judgment. Those are our rules. So we're not talking about losing the court having, this court having jurisdiction and the trial court lacking jurisdiction. No, that doesn't work either.
Certainly. And hindsight is 20/20. Perhaps the better route would have been to move to vacate. Our assumption was that because Mr. Stauffer had filed the notice of appeal, that this was the best avenue because the issue would be before the appellate court. So that is why we are here today. I mean, we are trying to protect the charity's claims, and we're stuck between two parties.
Well,
so,
are you going to contest bystander's report? Are you suggesting that this court doesn't have an accurate record before it?
Your Honor, I was not there that day, so I am not.
No, but you're representing one of the charities, aren't you, Ronald McDonald?
I am.
All right. So I'm asking you, you asked to speak, so I'm asking you if you are contesting the bystander's report that's the record on appeal.
The report with respect, or the statements in the report regarding Mr. Lieberman's objections and how that came about, that was not my understanding of how those objections were made. It doesn't comport with the update I got from my associate that day. My understanding was that Mr. Lieberman very clearly objected to the dismissal with prejudice because there were these outstanding issues. There was a proposal that the dismissal be without prejudice. And that's why that language ended up in the order.
But you're almost suggesting that a dismissal without prejudice is not a dismissal order.
No.
That's strange.
I think the concern is,
back to what Justice McBride was saying, what makes this so important to you, a with prejudice or without prejudice? It's a dismissal order, is it not?
The case was
dismissed pursuant to settlement.
Correct.
You agree there was a settlement?
With respect to the charities, we do not contest that 29%. With respect to the payment to Mr. Frake, that portion we have no basis to contest And I state that Mr. Lieberman may have additional comments about the other charities. I have no basis to contest it. I was not part of that negotiation. And as I stand here today, I'm not contesting it.
All right. Anything further you want to add?
No, Your Honor.
I hope the parties understand, you know, we have a bystander's report. And this isn't something we can't take seriously. We're bound by the record on appeal or an agreed statement of facts or a bystander's report that's prepared in every single case. So if you don't have anything further, you may be seated. Mr. Lieberman, did you want to say anything further? You may. I wasn't trying to cut you off if you want to say something further.
If I may, I don't even think we have, even if we did dispute privately anything in the bystander's report, I don't think there's any procedural or legal basis we can assert to dispute it, and we haven't disputed it. I will just say that the bystander report does reflect the basis why we're here, and that is we objected to dismissal with prejudice. And
I'm going to go back to, I'm going to have to ask you again, but I did ask Ms. Mentz. If the judge entered the order that you're asking, nothing would be different. The judge had the jurisdiction to retain over this settlement. And if the dismissal was with prejudice, that doesn't change the landscape in any way, shape, or form. Because the order, again, which, you know, everyone agreed to, the order says that this court retains jurisdiction of these matters to enforce the settlement terms. So if it was without prejudice or with, that doesn't change the fact that if there were some kind of issue here that you brought to the court's attention, that the court could correct it. That's why it retained jurisdiction. And courts always do. I mean, it's very seldom would somebody walk out the door, you know, and not have the court retain jurisdiction because they want the terms enforced. So I don't understand this language. There's nothing magical about it, and I don't think it changes any landscape here in terms of, you know, something's missing. Well, judge, this is what's missing. I mean, unless you can explain it to me.
I try, Your Honor, and that is that this was a very contentious litigation, and there was a concern that there would be continued controversy between Mr. Stouffer and Mr. Frake about how things would play out with respect to this settlement. And the charities are beneficiaries of that trust and have seen what's happened over whatever, however many years of litigation it was at that point, 4 years, I think.
And you didn't think the judge could handle any of this?
No, I certainly didn't. That was never my thought, that the judge couldn't handle it. But our thought was that if, first of all, our anticipation walking in was there would be a document that would be more specific, more complete, and signed by everybody, less subject to dispute. And we
thought over the long Thanksgiving holiday weekend, when the plaintiff's counsel and the attorney that had the apparent authority on behalf of the trust and the wills would work to prepare all their releases and so forth over the long holiday weekend, when they knew they had a settlement and nobody objected to it?
No, Your Honor, we anticipated that would happen Monday morning.
Well, that's never been my experience as either a lawyer for 21 years or a judge for almost 15. That's just not how it works. It defies common sense.
It is what the email did say, that there would be such a document. And we anticipated such a
document. Well, they didn't say that the document would be on Monday, available on Monday, did they?
No.
And you didn't say by return email, is that document going to be ready on Monday?
That's true.
Anything further you want to add?
No, but thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Messner?
Just three things, Judge. The first thing was what Justice Walker just said about apparent authority of Jennifer Howe. There's no apparent authority over Stouffer as executor. There's no apparent authority over
Stouffer. No, there was actual authority because at the time that the settlement was entered, she was representing Mr. Stouffer as the executor and the trustee. That's what her actual authority was.
But not as executor.
No. The only thing okay. that you were at that point, you were representing him individually.
And as executor.
No, well, that's not. No. Well, that's not.
That's when my appearance was on file. The only appearance that was subsequently filed was her as trustee.
Everything in the record says that she was representing Mr. Stouffer as the executor and the trustee.
All right. That's not the actual in the record, but okay.
Okay, well, maybe I'm wrong.
I understand. The next thing was, one important thing I'm on this suggested settlement agreement, and that is the lack of good faith. When I say the lack of good faith on the settlement agreement, where beneficiaries were not notified of the terms intentionally. When I say intentionally, my name as email was never given the emails to the court or the emails from the court on that specific settlement. We didn't know. We were in the dark.
No,
we didn't know.
You're not the actual settlement proposal.
That settlement proposal,
right,
I told you, was sent 3 days before court, and again, I didn't get it till Monday. Had I received it earlier, there would have been an objection. I mean, there was an objection. I never sent it, but that's not on the record. But there was no acceptance of that agreement by my client or by me. And the last thing I'm going to suggest, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm going to suggest it anyway. In this case that's been going on for 3 or 4 years, I would presume, and maybe my presumption is incorrect, that the court would pull either the parties or...
You didn't raise that before the judge, did you? You know, that's part of the problem here, is that there's a real serious forfeiture issue from you and the charities. You never asked the judge to do any of this. You didn't ask the judge to pull the parties. For all we know, from everything that we've seen, he asked everybody, is this a settlement or not? He said you were all there. So this whole thing about pulling, please.
Okay.
Didn't you raise that in your reply brief?
And he did, pardon me?
Didn't you raise that for the first time in your reply brief?
Correct, Judge.
Yeah, you can't do that either. 341, look at the rule. You can't raise things for the first time in a reply brief. And you didn't ask for an evidentiary hearing. You already told us that. You didn't ask that the judge poll everyone. You know, so you can't be asking us to do things.
I understand, Judge.
And then we have the bystanders.
But we still have a good faith argument that we didn't receive anything, that the terms weren't assented to, and the judge never asked us if we agreed to it. But that's besides the point. I'm just telling you I was there, that's why.
But you didn't tell the judge that you didn't agree to it either.
I objected to the email being produced into evidence. I said, Judge, there is no agreement based on that email. That's all I said. I didn't say anything else.
You said there was no agreement?
I didn't say that, Judge.
You just said
I said,
that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. I heard it too. You just
well,
said
Well, I
may
have said it incorrect.
Okay, all right.
What I'm saying is I objected to the email being put into evidence because it wasn't part of the record, and I had not agreed to it.
Okay. Well, that's
all.
Something that the bystanders report is contradicted because
I understand.
The judge did say that the charities objected to the judge seeing the email.
That's
what
correct.
Did you do? You're saying.
I objected to the court to
did
seeing
it. Did you object
the
to the court seeing it? Is your argument the same as Mr. Lieberman's, that we didn't want the judge to see it in case we had to try the case? We didn't
no,
want
I,
him to be biased
no,
because
judge.
He was involved in settlements,
I
but he wasn't involved in anything.
I objected to seeing it. It wasn't in the record. I had never seen it before.
Okay.
And it was produced that time at 10 o'clock in the morning. My client never saw it. My other client never saw it.
Was this at 10 or was it at 11?
Pardon me?
The email said everybody was supposed to be there at 11.
Okay, we start at 11 o'clock.
All right.
I apologize. That is what I'm saying. In good faith requires that. I don't know why they didn't send me the emails. I have no idea. I don't know why they didn't send it to the court.
Well, you mean the one about it being settled?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't send it to me.
You know, apparently everybody else, well, you were on the email that said there had been a settlement.
No, I was on the email from Jennifer Howe.
Right, I know. The important one.
And I never, saw that email. Okay.
I know, because you were making turkey. We were all cooking turkey.
Yes, and I was prepared for trial. I have no problem.
But, okay, well, that's not what the judge said. He said he would never let any of you out of the courtroom if there wasn't a settlement. And that's what judges do. But anyway, this email, which was sent to you, okay, legal at S.
Yes, correct.
This email confirms a settlement between the plaintiff and the defendants, which was reached today, and which I have confirmed with counsel for Jim Stauffer individually, as well as David Lieberman. So I know you already said that you talked about the 29%.
That's it.
Okay. So.
I know it was not discussed with any of my clients.
All right. Well, the case is a very unusual one. I appreciate we set it for oral argument to hear from all of you. This court is a court of limited review. We are bound by a record. The record in this case was prepared by a judge. He has sworn to it under 109. And that's what our record is. And I hope that the parties appreciate that we are limited by that report. And, of course, we have other documents in the record. We will take this case under advisement.
I understand.
All right.
Thank you all.
The court is adjourned.